Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and today my guest is Lauren Groff. Her fifth book is a book of short stories called Florida. It's been published by Riverhead Books. And as I understand it, Florida was at a certain point imposed upon you. You're a northerner, yes?
Yes.
And you moved to Florida, and you talk a good deal about the move. At Halloween, you feel rather guilty putting your white little boy into a ghost costume because of what it looks like in the heart of the Deep South. And the book is full of a certain resistance to Florida. How does it become your subject?
That was a character. I've never put my white little boy into a ghost costume. But yeah, I do feel great resistance to Florida, while at the same time, I love it very deeply. So it's a feeling of tremendous ambivalence that I'm sort of suspended between this overwhelming love and this overwhelming repulsion toward the state in which I have found myself. My husband moved us there 12 years ago. And at first, I was not a fan of Florida. It's very hot. It's very humid. There are a lot of bugs that want to kill you. It's a place that I am not comfortable with. But as a northerner, I have learned to love it.
Now tell me, how do you learn to write about a place that isn't home to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I first had to read, right? I think that most of us come to writing through reading, and it wasn't until I read John McPhee's Oranges that I realized that, oh, this place is actually very interesting, and it has a lot to say. And then I read Marjorie Kinnon Brawling's The Yearling and her Cross Creek and Shadow Country by Peter Matheson, and there's a very broad, deep literary history in Florida that we don't pay a lot of attention to, but it is profound, and it gave me the way to write about Florida and the way to think about it as a really rich place.
But the interesting thing is that it never stops being a place that has an underworld, mm-hmm. or an overworld. Storms, insects, and sinkholes, and a suggestion that the place, as I read, I said, this is like our president. This is an underworld which we don't expect, and it seems to me that this is virtually unavoidable in your Florida, at
mm-hmm.
least.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, is it real or is it the metaphor for America today that you've discovered?
Well, it's both. Florida's not one monolithic thing, right? I mean, there are many, many Floridas in the state of Florida, which is possibly why we have such a hard time talking about it as a state. But I do see it, and the way that I see Florida is that it's a swamp, right? I mean, it's deep, it's muddy, it's full of dangerous things. But over it all is this pour of golden light that almost tries to obviate the really deep, dark strangeness of the place. So we've got Disney, right? We've got mermaids at WeekyWatchy. We've got all sorts of strange things. We've got Miami. Miami is itself a very unusual place, full of contradiction. So I do see this, the place, as a microcosm of America in a very real way, in that we have the swamp at the very center of who we are. And a lot of people are deeply invested in pouring light and pretending that it doesn't exist.
Well, you've written a story. Is it called Above and Below?
Mm-hmm.
Is that? My guest is Lauren Groff. When I was in graduate school, my sense that one of these days they would take away my fellowship, and I would move inexorably in the direction of homelessness, which is what happens to this particular narrator. And the level of fear, terror, that we don't know how to live, where to live, how to rescue ourselves, comes up again and again. A story called Eyewall, a huge storm, and into it come the narrator's ex-husband, her father, her childhood sweetheart, her college sweetheart. All of these people are blown in with the storm, and you can't tell whether this is because she's been hit on the noggin so many times that she's hallucinating, or that this is just Florida. All the people from your past arrive back to memory as you get hit in the middle of a storm that wants to take every hinge and sever it from what connects it to a building, to a window. Have you been endangered in these ways?
My endangerment in Florida is more psychological than anything, I think. It's a danger of pervasive feelings of dread, and part of it comes from having small children in this world of ours, which is very frightening, right? But the other part is feeling as though the social fabric that supports us all is thin and becoming much thinner as the days go on. And the feeling that we're all vulnerable in ways that we haven't been vulnerable before, and we're not able to take care of our vulnerable people. So this is something that I've felt for a very long time, and I'm seeing it come to fruition in horrifying ways all the time. And so for me, I live in a house with a metal roof. Every storm feels like it's the end of the world because it's so loud, and I'm always afraid of my old 1904 house sort of splintering into termite-ridden pieces. So,
well,
yes.
We're talking here in Los Angeles, where, although not a marsh, we are a desert. Mm-hmm. We have our own Disney, mm-hmm. not very far. Are, in some sense of the word, all places, including Faulkner's Yoknapatawpha, places for fear and dread.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what a place does to a writer?
I don't know if that's what a place does to a writer. I think it depends on the place and it depends on the writer, right? I think there's something to be said about the gothic nature of Florida, just the inherently gothic nature of it, because of its extremes, because of its profound darknesses. I don't know LA at all, but I'm sure you could write a really beautiful narrative of dread and pervasive dread here as well.
Well, Joan Didion.
Yes, exactly, right, exactly. And she has, yeah, for sure.
This is the first time I've spoken to Lauren Groff. This is her fifth book. As I read her, I discovered that her first novel, The Monsters of Templeton, was a favorite of Stephen King's, and her last novel, Fates and Furies, was chosen by Barack Obama as his favorite novel of the year. Now, we're living in a country without much of a supportive literary community. It seems to me that you've been extraordinarily graced by the enthusiasm that our readers bring to your books.
Absolutely.
Can you account for it?
I can't account for it. I feel it's luck, right? I feel profoundly grateful to Stephen King, to Richard Russo, to Barack Obama, to all the people who've helped to support the books. I think in this life of ours, we've got hard work, we've got talent, and we've got luck. And I got lucky in my readers, to be honest.
It's very interesting to me because, for the most part right now, I've been doing this show for 33 years. Mm-hmm. Which is 52 writers a year for 33 years. And most of them find themselves without that kind of literary enthusiasm. And I think that one of the reasons you do is that Lauren Groff really writes books about what we call the way we live now. This book of stories, Florida, does strike me as being about an America whose undertow is dread. Mm-hmm. A husband at a certain point is digging up a pear tree that's said to have died of climate change. It's a very original way of putting that. We don't want to yet say that our trees have died of climate change, and yet that is the way we're afraid we're living now. Mm-hmm. Most of the time in these stories, a mother has two children. If indeed the mother is on the scene at all, there are several sets of children who've been left unaccountably abandoned. But if the mother is there, she is very concerned. Are these boys going to grow to be good men? Is there such a thing as good men? Can there be? How do you teach it? How do you rescue them? The narrator, whether you or not, sometimes she seems like you, but I won't insist.
Thank you. That's good. No biographical fallacy here.
Right,
thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. She does say, my husband is a better person than I am, and the boys, the two boys, when they are two boys, are given extraordinary insight into their mother's feelings of dread and the feeling that we're living at the, not end, but approaching the end of the human world. Is that your feeling, or is that a dramatic device to make fiction more ultimate?
I would be lying if I said that it's not my feeling. And I think,
you convince me.
Oh, God. Well, so I see the ravages of climate change on a daily basis because Florida, its ecosystem is so profoundly vulnerable itself. And I go for a run in this place called Payne's Prairie, which comes up multiple times in the stories. And it's this beautiful space full of so many birds that Jonathan Franzen would pass out on a daily basis, if he's all right. And snakes and alligators and just this teeming life. But after the hurricanes of last year, the aquifer is over full. And so it's being swallowed up from below by water. So I'm seeing the ravages of what we're doing to nature. And I think that we've all agreed to not freak out on a daily basis. If we were actually to react to climate change in an appropriate way, we'd be running around with our heads on fire. But we're not doing that. We've all just, it's almost like a mass hypnotism to keep us from acting in the way that we need to act if we're going to have children grow up to be adults in this world.
These are not stories about people moving to the big city looking for jobs and succeeding or failing. These are stories about people who are comparing themselves to the people down the block. One of the neighbors says, quite correctly it seems to me, I need to take a break from you. You're too worried. You're too upset. I have children too. I'm raising them. I get their Halloween costumes made and made by hand. What about you? Well, this mother is, to some extent, a writer. That's made clear. And she needs her time alone. And her children need to respect those things. So does her husband. And we all are trying to find a way to live in the middle of life becoming more and more difficult. Now, I won't deny that a reader, you see, who wants to read about life, I think many readers do, maybe even most. I came from a time when we were trying to escape, so we were reading Donald Barthelme and John Barth, but these stories are about life, but not so much so that they're not the product of the imagination. And these stories really do deal with the metaphors of self-destruction that we're living in as a country today. And it seems to me that you succeed in telling us how we're not succeeding.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to write polemically, of course, because I've tried to do that before and it doesn't work out. And I'm not a nonfiction writer. I'm a fiction writer. So my vision of the truth is from this very corner of my eye, right? So I have to sidle up to it sort of gently and not scare it away. So I'm trying as hard as I can to write about the truth of my own deep, dark heart. But it's also profoundly loving. I love humanity. I want us to survive. I want nature to be resilient and come back after the salt that we've put on. I want my children to grow up in a world that is as beautiful as my own childhood was, right? I want all of these things. And I don't want to look away. I don't want to flinch. And I think that some of my previous work might have been flinching, and I don't think that I can do that anymore as a writer.
That's very interesting, because you go back to the Quaker, William Bartram, mm-hmm. who traveled in Florida, who wrote some of the most beautiful naturalist writing that's ever existed. You quote him, the Native Americans referred to him as a flower hunter.
Yes. Yes,
a way of saying that he was not brave. That
he was a hunter of flowers. Yes.
But Bartram was perfect for Florida, mm-hmm. and vice versa. Mm-hmm. We're reading William Bartram, mm-hmm. and we're reading William Bartram's very personal and remarkable and beautiful language.
It's just ecstatic. I mean, he's an ecstatic writer on a level that he's almost religious in certain ways.
Yes. And if we're learning about writing, it's not about subject matter. It's about letting our souls be buffeted by the beauty of these sentences and this special pair of eyes.
Think about him, too, as an alternative to the idea of what American masculinity should be. I mean, he was gentle. He wept when he saw people killing a bear mother and then her cub. I mean, he had friends among the Native Americans who lived in Florida and in his travels throughout the South at the time. I mean, he approached the natural world not with domineering or domination, but as a sort of a friend, and a friend who wanted to describe it as the product of God, right? It was the most beautiful thing he could think of. Yeah, I love him so much. I think we all need to be reading William Bartram as an alternative.
And the stories in this book, Florida, are matches between our horrors, our fears, our dreads. And how do you describe this bug, these mosquitoes, that swarm? How do we make it clear that however awful or even fearsome, nature is aligned in creating a kind of battalion of beauties?
Yes, that's absolutely the case, and we have to pay attention.
We have to pay attention, otherwise we miss it.
Right.
Otherwise, you see, as you joke in one of the stories, Florida might as well be Derrida.
Right.
You know, until we start looking at the world and not the abstractions about the world, we're not seeing anything. We're not feeling anything. We're not knowing anything. And it's not until we let go and say, oh, help me take care of my children. But more than that, help them take care of me. Let them bring me things to show me that will impress me as much as they're impressed, because they're new in the world and I'm an old hand. And that's one of the beauties, I think, of the way you write, that the interaction between the very young and a sensibility of a writer. A writer likes to think, oh, cynicism is the highest attainment of writing. And then we learn, no, it's not. Cynicism will prevent us from being able to live in the world.
I absolutely believe that's the case. That doesn't mean that we can't respond to the world with humor. And I think that humor is the only thing that allows us to be able to release some of the valves. But I just think that the only way we're going to get through this is through empathy and through love. And by being open and paying such close attention to the things, the beauties of this world, because they're not a side effect. They're the purpose of the world, right? It's the purpose of the world to be there for one another and to show one another the beauty.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Lauren Groff about her collection of short stories, Florida. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Lauren Groff about her collection of short stories, Florida, where the state of Florida transcends space and time to be really the consciousness of the characters in these short stories. And these characters are living in an America that's growing more and more dread-inspiring.
Yes.
And so the question of the book, just as the question of Fates and Furies, is can a marriage involving so many components of people who are so busily dividing themselves into so many pieces, can a marriage survive? This book, Florida, says, can we be where we are? Can we live where we live? Can we come to accept the horrifying things that are going on all around us and yet still have a life that we are not afraid to live? How do you conquer your fears?
I believe in cognitive dissonance. So I believe that we can live within contradictory ideas all at the same time. And I don't conquer my fears. My fears don't conquer me either, but we live in an uneasy marriage to my fears and I. Writing this book was really a way of shining a light into the darkness and trying very hard to see what's out there and try to see what's prowling out there.
Do you agree? I find it imaginatively much darker than any of the other books.
Oh, for sure. Yes, of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, the previous books were not necessarily, I mean, Arcadia was very dark, imaginatively dark. Arcadia and this book were deeply invested in the idea of bringing children into a flawed and sad world in a lot of ways. And the world has always been dangerous, right? As long as humans have been on the planet, it's been dangerous. But the challenges now seem so overwhelming. They feel overwhelming. So the really big darkness in that comes from this idea of procreating within what we're experiencing right now.
Funny question.
Okay.
Does rewriting help cope with those fears?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's interesting. You mean rewriting, so revisioning the world and creating a world through
making the story work.
Yeah, making the story work.
Even when it's dark.
Yes. I mean, that's how I work, right? I write in longhand. I throw out my first draft. I write another draft. I throw that out. I do it until the story does work. And maybe that's my way of working with the anxiety. Maybe not the fear, but absolutely the anxiety, for sure.
It seemed to me at a certain point, the stories zigzagged between extraordinary beauty in the writing and extraordinary fear in the fact. And the writing was always trying to do an arm wrestle with the facts of the environment, to take them over the edge, and the edge is a place that their frequent cliff edges occur here all the time. Mm-hmm. I notice certain things. One of your favorite words seemed to be seer.
This is good. I have to write this down to make sure I never use it again.
Right. Oh, no, it's a good word.
It is a good word.
For Florida, you know, for a place where it's hot and certain colors get seared into the imagination and the characters are turning red in the sun. And it's a very interesting thing to watch these people try to live in the environments they've been provided with. Mm-hmm. Some of those environments are nature given, but some of them are given by you, the writer.
Yeah.
And so you have to see as you're reading that the writer is making a choice mm-hmm. about challenging her characters,
mm-hmm.
challenging them to live and to stay alive.
Mm-hmm. Or at least to meet the challenges of staying alive, for sure, as hard as they can, right? I'm trying to get them to man up, right? To actually become equal to the life that they're trying to live and to the environment that is such a tremendous burden on them in a lot of ways.
I've been talking with Lauren Groff. She is the author of Florida. Her last novel was the very popular Fates and Furies. Thank you for joining me.
It was such a pure pleasure. Thank you.
These books are published by Riverhead Books. You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from an Apple podcast or wherever you get your podcast. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Joseph McBride and Nicola Gubitsch are our guests.